Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
You too much disruption out of you. It's just, I can't work with this anymore.
I know. I dump everything.
You're moving
over.
Stuff
I knock
everywhere. Jeez.
Oh, yeah, I'm a walking nightmare.
You're like a bull in a china shop.
I am. Mm-hmm. I am. Mm-hmm. Like that time that I came in and knocked everything off.
Yes,
the walls.
I remember that. That has never. Those things have never been the same. By the way,
no. They're completely, I broke them all.
You broke them all.
I did.
So the great job. Congratulations.
I'm really glad there wasn't any glass. Like all the frame there in that photo was plastic.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, God bless the dollar store.
Yeah.
Because then you can just get that stuff for a buck.
Yeah, it's
true. Because it's a dollar.
Yeah, it is. Because
it's the dollar store.
Because it's the dollar store.
Did you hear? $1. Did you hear that they are, they might increase those prices?
What,
at the dollar store?
$2?
I don't know. But like, what do you call it then?
The $2 store. The $5 store? It depends on the price.
I don't know what it's going to be. But I heard that they're doing it.
Well, if they increase the prices, they got to increase the quality.
Yeah, plus then you got to also spend money changing your store name because Dollar Tree can't be Dollar Tree anymore.
No, it'd be $5 Tree.
Ew, that's not near as good. $5
it's
Tree.
It's not as catchy.
$5 Tree.
Yeah.
That's actually a great band name, though.
$5 Tree.
$5 Tree.
Write that down.
$5 Tree. Write that down. Okay, folks, welcome to Season 3, Episode 14 of the CFD's Podcast for Good. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive. Joining me, as always, is...
Heather Lucas, the Fiscal and Policy Coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
Indeed you are.
I am.
Thanks for coming on the show, Heather.
Thanks.
Really appreciate you making it.
Yeah, yeah. Glad to be here. It's a good one.
Yeah. So this is a good one. We have actually spoken about this topic in different ways before. It's a real, real lighthearted topic. domestic violence.
Yes.
Which in today's day and age, obviously is a pretty big sort of thing. It's on the tip of everybody's tongue as we begin to see a dialogue shift in the way we talk about domestic violence, which I think is fantastic. And so we sat down with Gina Blanchard Reed. She's the executive director of Turning Point Survivor Advocacy Center.
Yes.
Based out of Mason County, but does services everywhere, which I was a little bit surprised at.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they take people from all over the country, which was also very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, how does somebody in Florida find out about a domestic violence shelter in Shelton?
I don't know if it's something where they're just like, I'm, you know, trying to get as far away from where I am as possible.
Good point,
or
good point.
If they're just like, they Google, say, domestic violence shelters, and that's one of the, like, top number one things that comes up.
I guess,
Maybe they've got really good search engine results.
Maybe they got great search engine results.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah,
the Google searches.
The Google. Way to go with the Google.
On the Google.
It's the Google. I don't know. We could do this all day. Jeez. Diving into nonsense very quickly.
Yes, yes. one of the things that makes domestic violence so unique to the Combined Fund Drive is that we are housed in the Community Programs Division at the Secretary of State's office, and within the Community Programs Division is actually the Address Confidentiality Program.
Yes.
And so the Secretary of State's office is actually very well versed in working with nonprofits just like Turning Point, Survivor Advocacy Center, Safe Place, places like that, because the staff of the IDRES confidentiality program works with them a lot.
Yeah.
So this is definitely something that this office in particular, whoever inhabits it, is very like oversees this program, and it's something that I know Secretary Wyman is very passionate about as well. So this is a unique issue for the Secretary of State's office because of the work that we have some folks do in this area.
Yeah.
Domestic violence in and of itself is, as we kind of hit on, is a growing sort of issue. As crazy as it sounds, she hit the statistic that 1 in 4 women go through domestic violence of some kind. That's insanity.
That is insanity.
She hesitated to kind of talk about whether it's getting worse or whether it's getting better, but we've kind of heard it from other organizations that it's not getting better.
Yeah.
You know. So this is an issue that will be here for a while.
Yeah.
And I think that it's an important issue to talk about. And so it was really quite cool to kind of dive into a lot of it with Gina.
Yeah. And, you know, in doing research for this podcast, one of the things I came across was that when there is a terrible economy, mm-hmm. domestic violence gets worse.
Yeah.
It gets worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that's one of the pressure points.
Yeah. I mean, right? If you've got like any kind of financial issues in the home mm-hmm. or job stability.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have moments of anger and frustration and sometimes people who are not equipped to handle them.
Right.
They become abusers.
Super interesting. Yeah. There's just so many layers to this particular subject. It's unbelievable. Like, you could talk about it for a long time, and you could talk about it in both directions, both the victim and the perpetrator.
Yeah.
And sort of all of the factors that go into that relationship.
Yeah.
Really interesting stuff. But before we dive in to our interview with Gina, we do have a question of the pod.
Yes.
And you're going to need to walk me through this one because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I went down a rabbit hole. So, so issues like domestic violence, you know, they've been ongoing for millennia, right?
Yes.
Forever, the history of humanity. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was thinking a little bit about like formulating a question.
Okay.
And I thought maybe, you know, domestic violence might not be a top concern for people. Mm-hmm, like, it's just not in the top part of their head if it's not something they experience directly.
Okay.
And then I thought, you know, maybe some people don't care because they have bigger fish to fry.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right?
This is how you got here.
That's how I got here, okay? Bigger fish to fry.
Bigger fish to fry.
So then I was like, huh, Philip Kerrigan, what's your favorite kind of fish to eat?
Wow. I mean, really?
Yeah. A little insight into how my mind works.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah. You know, domestic violence is a real issue, but some people have other fish to fry. Mm, fish is delicious.
What do you like to eat? Let's talk about food. I feel like I direct questions about food.
I mean, that's fine.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm an eater.
Yeah. And me too.
So let's see. In the Northwest, of course, a huge salmon fan.
Yeah.
Love the salmon.
Yeah.
And I'm emotionally distraught that it's going away.
Yeah, right.
I really love the taste of it. But, I mean, the best fish on Earth, as far as I'm concerned.
On Earth?
On Earth.
This is a statement and a half.
Is the halibut.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's. I mean, I don't even think there's an argument there. I think it's halibut.
Really?
Unquestioned.
Why is it unquestioned? Why is it the best on?
Because it's delicious.
Okay.
Okay. It's moist if you cook it correct. All right.
Because it's delicious.
If you, I mean, it's the best. It's the best of the fish and chip fish.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, every time I go to a restaurant, I'm like, hey, I'd like the fish and chips, and they're like, would you like the cod or the halibut? I want to look and be like, would I take cod over halibut?
Do I look like
Do
a
I
cod
look like
man
a guy
to you?
Who takes cod over halibut? No.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm gonna say halibut.
So yeah, I mean, I feel like yes, your halibut assumptions and assertions here are valid.
Okay.
This is a valid point. Halibut is delightful as
it
a fish
is.
And chip.
It's a flaky fish.
It is a flaky fish. Yeah, salmon. It's sad that salmon are going away.
I know, because they're so good.
Yeah. Hey.
And also they help the environment.
They do. So
they help the orcas.
Come on. Let's get it together. Yeah. Get the plastic out of the water and the mercury.
Let's loosen some dams or whatever it is that people have to do.
Let's fix some things. Come on.
Let's do it.
fish are dying. We're all going to die.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's that. But I love sushi.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, she's amazing.
And I really don't know the difference taste-wise.
Oh, I thought you were going to name a specific fish in the sushi.
I mean, I've had tuna in sushi.
Tuna's
I've had
good.
Salmon in sushi. Mm-hmm. I've had white fish.
So you're less about what fish, mm-hmm. and you're more about what fish dish.
Yeah,
you're into.
I'm more about the fish dish.
So
fish
sushi
taste.
And anything. Is there anything you wouldn't eat on sushi?
Mayonnaise.
Yes, besides something that doesn't belong there.
Not really. I mean, like, if sushi's good, it's good.
If you like you roll even with like the squids and all that business.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've not had like too many outside of a just fish realm, like
right.
eels.
The
squid,
standard operating procedures.
Your shrimp
will.
In there, you
right.
know, that kind of a thing.
Right.
But like all of those sea creatures are dying, so get your sushi now.
I find that the tuna
or don't get your sushi
is my favorite sushi fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the tuna is my favorite sushi fish.
Okay.
I think it's delicious.
Nice.
And now, do you go with the roll, or do you go with, or is yours the like
the
slab
sashimi.
Of fish on the thing?
I normally go with the roll because the roll has a lot more awesomeness to
yes.
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas,
it adds
you know,
components.
The sashimi is just the fish and the rice, and
that's
you're like,
right.
okay.
And it's also much more expensive.
It is. That's yeah. also a factor.
Yeah. What's up with that? I mean, you're
What's
giving
up
me
with
less.
That? Yeah.
You give me less. But like it's costing
charging me more.
Yeah, that's yeah. weird, right?
Maybe because there's more fish in it.
Yeah, there that's is it. Way more fish. I mean, yeah. they drape it over.
Yeah, and they're like cucumbers, whatever.
Psh, get them out of here. That's just filler.
Yeah, we'll just add cucumbers and carrots
yeah.
to anything.
I mean, sure, why not? Let's get some imitation crab in there too. Throw it yeah. in there.
Throw an avocado in there. We'll call it Californian.
It's totally true. Mm-hmm. It's totally true. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, that was that. That's a great question.
I'm glad you liked it.
Nicely done. Nicely done. It's an interesting walk you took to get there.
Yep.
But good question.
Yeah.
And we're not going to talk any more about fish.
No, not
because this
time.
Is not a fish podcast.
Nope.
We are actually going to go back into domestic violence. We're going to talk to
Weird
Gina
segue.
Blanchard Reed. Here is our interview with her about Turning Point Survivor Advocacy Center.
So we're here with Gina Blanchard Reed. She is the executive director of Turning Point Survivor Advocacy Center. Gina, thank
Hi.
You for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So can you give us a little history about Turning Point Survivor Advocacy Center and what you do for the community?
Sure. Well, we started in 2000 as an advocacy center. We opened our shelter in 2009. The community really came together and said, we need to have this in our community. So that happened in 2009. We opened up a Belfair office about a year and a half ago to serve the rural community out there. And we have two advocates that, bilingual advocates that are out there serving.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So what does domestic violence look like? So where do you primarily serve?
Well, we see clients from all over the state.
Oh,
I think
okay.
a lot of people, we're in
yeah.
Mason County,
yeah.
we're the second largest domestic violence shelter, but when people are fleeing domestic violence, they come from all over the state. We get clients from Florida, California,
mm-hmm. wow.
Relocating wow. to the area. So.
Yeah.
And how do
yeah.
folks find you?
There's a crisis number. There's even a national hotline, referrals from community members,
uh-huh.
friends, family. So it's important to get that crisis number out there.
Yeah.
And actually, if people just know what we do and they have a loved one that's in an unhealthy relationship, they're welcome to reach out to us.
Yeah. What does domestic violence in this area look like? What are sort of the symptoms that you see when folks come in?
Well, I think people sort of have a perception that... there's only certain people that experience domestic violence. And that's what really surprised me when I started working there, is realizing it really touches every family.
Yeah.
One of the first families that I saw there was actually a very conservative looking woman who, you know, looked like a homeschooler. I,
yeah.
you know, just very
yeah.
Long skirt. And, you know, you're kind of thinking, you know, it looked like she had herself together, seemed very educated.
Mm-hmm.
But she was coming from another county in the state and with her children. So I think that just to realize that one in four women experience domestic violence. And we also have male clients as well.
Right.
We get usually a couple times a month, we'll get a call from a man seeking a shelter
wow.
or services for domestic violence.
Yeah. So one in four women experience domestic violence
right.
at this point. Wow. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
It's unbelievable.
And we serve domestic violence is a broad term in the criminal sense, but
yeah.
we work with people that experience intimate partner domestic violence. So that means they have to be involved in some sexual manner.
Okay.
So there's some relationship So across the genders and that kind of thing. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Are you focusing on intimate partners because that's more of an issue, or like, why is it that focus?
Right. So, the need is much greater for the intimate partner. But we do have referrals. You know, there could be domestic violence from, you know, an aunt or, you know, a sister. But we focus on, the intimate partner domestic violence.
And when, someone, gets a referral or finds a way to get in contact with you guys, what then are the next steps? Is there a place you take them that's a safe place, and then you figure out what to do from there? I mean, what's the usual?
Traditionally, we do take walk-ins, but traditionally they will call and we do a shelter screening to see if they're eligible for our shelter and if they're, you know, their need matches with what we can do for them. Mm-hmm. At times we do refer to other agencies or other shelters. We have a very good relationship with other domestic violence shelters across the state. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we'll collaborate together on how to serve somebody.
Right.
And so once we determine they are eligible for a shelter, they come in, and then we always make a safety plan though before they attempt to leave, because that's the most deadly time for someone is when they're actually trying to get out. It does take about 7 times for someone to attempt to leave a domestic violence situation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So we want to make sure that they're safe, and then when they come to us, just depending if they're been traveling all day by bus and they're exhausted, we do a very minimal intake and then kind of get them rested and, you know, get into their room and then meet with their advocate the next day. But if they're able to, we go through an intake process and do a welcome packet with them, and they'll come to us with sometimes nothing but their clothes on their back, and so we get them set up with food from our pantry and for their little kitchenette and clothes and toiletries and whatnot.
So in your experience, how often have you seen domestic violence survivors turning to unhealthy or risky coping mechanisms like alcohol or drugs to cope?
That is, yes, that definitely happens.
Yeah.
And so we work with a number of other agencies, behavioral health, you know, chemical dependency. You know, there's just a variety of issues that arise that surround domestic violence. That's definitely a really good point, that there's oftentimes dependency on other ways to cope with the trauma and pain that they're feeling. I definitely want to talk about the children that we see as well, because that's an area that we just applied for a large grant. We do not have, we used to, but right now we do not have a separate youth advocate.
Okay.
And realized that about half of our clients in our shelter are children.
Oh, wow.
And that really impacted me when I was interviewing for the job last summer and saw a couple boys in the hallway with their basketball and they're going to go out to the back and play. And I realized that, you know, they're... this is their home for up to 3 months or a little bit longer, depending, and to try to make that as normal as possible. So that's an area that we're looking to grow, to hire a youth advocate and to have a separate space for children, and so they could have homework clubs and art classes, and because they're experiencing trauma. And even the pets that we take in, I saw a cat that a lady was coming in yesterday, and I had her cat in a little carrier because we are a pet friendly shelter, and the cat's really meowing, and I was thinking about that cat that's, you know, been uprooted from his or her home.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So do you think I like to ask this question a lot of people who are dealing with a certain sector that, you know, has had a real roller coaster ride, if you will, of like historic background. Do you see the problem getting better or worse?
Well, in some ways I see it getting worse, because I think that, I don't know if it's getting worse, but maybe we're becoming more aware that things that, and that may be a good thing. People are talking about it more, where, you know, a couple decades ago, domestic violence and people didn't even believe that was happening. There was a lot of blaming. And I think that survivors are being empowered more to speak out and to find resources. It's hard to say whether or not it's getting worse or better, but I do know that a big emphasis, a turning point, is prevention. We have a full-time prevention education specialist, and she's out there in schools and doing presentations, you know, through to civic groups, churches, but really trying to educate young people about their, you know, healthy boundaries and consent. And so that's a way that we feel that, you know, is... Okay, it may not be immediate, but we believe it will be helpful.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I think that, you know, if people maybe feel like they have more avenues to get away now than they used to
exactly.
out of those situations. You
right.
know, they have more help, perhaps. Mm-hmm. So maybe that is the silver lining in it.
And there are other, there's more and more perpetrator treatment centers and mm-hmm. Groups, and we partner with them as well.
Yeah.
But so that's important to also treat that side of it. And that's why working with the children that have experienced trauma is so important, because mm-hmm. if that's not dealt with while they're young, and how to cope and what's mm-hmm. what's healthy relationships, yeah. It's very possible they could grow up in a situation where that's normal for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Repeat the cycle.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So your spot is obviously step one. Folks get out of the toxic relationship mm-hmm. they're in. How often do you see domestic violence survivors go beyond mm-hmm. just step one and then begin to actually get counseling, okay. mental health professionals? Mm-hmm. Do you see that very often once they take that first step? Are they essentially off and running at that point, really trying to get away from the situation?
You know, each person's different. We do have clients that come back to us after, you know, some time. They go back to their abuser, mainly because I think that they weren't set up with proper housing or
yeah.
Job security and that yeah. sort of thing. So there's a dependency. But we also have some wonderful success stories where there was one woman who went to several states. She finally ended up here in Washington State. If you know, her abuser kept finding her
mm-hmm.
and she stayed at our shelter, took advantage of every service that we have, every class, every
yeah,
support group,
yeah.
Was really proactive and just getting herself and her children on a solid footing. And she got a good job, and she actually just about 3 or 4 months ago got her first house.
Oh,
so
cool.
She settled
cool.
in the area
yeah.
and she comes back every once in a while and talks with her advocate. And,
mm-hmm.
and so that's wonderful to see. And,
yeah.
you know, she still is very careful about social media, and
sure.
She actually spoke at one of our events, and we had to make sure she wasn't photographed because
right.
her perpetrators had a
right.
history of following her across the country. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But she's a very healthy, happy person, and
excellent.
Very thankful for our services.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you talked a little bit about like being empowered, like mm-hmm. some of these people who come in and they find empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
So like we've had this whole movement with Me Too,
mm-hmm.
and some of the women who have experienced Me Too stuff, they've talked, been more vocal about mm-hmm. like harassment, mm-hmm. Sexual assault, things like that. And there's been kind of more talk about, okay, well, instead of it just being about a woman's experience, what about the perpetrator, like mm-hmm. the men who are doing these kinds of things? So do you think that there's going to be more of a shift in talking about domestic violence, less about this is a woman who's being abused, instead of these are the people who are abusing them? Like, is there going to be more of a focus on the perpetrators and stopping that?
Well, from my understanding, there just recently there is some legislation that was passed to sort of categorize offenders and,
mm-hmm.
and perpetrators. There's, you know, I think it's up to level 5, where probably someone who's at a level 5 is probably not going to change their behavior. But there
right.
are some people that was a one-time incident of, you know, they have no anger management skills. And so that's where these the perpetrator treatments that they go through can be very helpful.
Okay.
So in those cases, I mean, if a family was able to reconcile in a healthy way, that does happen occasionally. So I think, but really we're there for the survivor, and we have to really make sure that they're supported and heard. And so it's really two separate things,
yeah.
but we do realize at times that's a component mm-hmm. to their family actually coming back together in a healthy way,
yeah.
And not ignoring that. You know, that we have to make sure that they're safe and
yeah.
And, so
with the rise of this particular movement, have you seen more people sort of brave enough to report their domestic violence situations? Have you seen that?
Well, we have a very good relationship with our prosecutors and in our county, and we have our legal advocates that work with them. And I think that when clients know that they have a team of support and there's a lot of
yeah.
communication and they understand the process, oftentimes they'll feel like they can go through it. If they don't feel that it's going to do any good, or you know, that's just going to come back and harm
right,
them, then
right.
so it's really important for our legal advocates to, you know, be there. We go to court with them. We
yeah.
help them fill out the paperwork. We have great communication
mm-hmm.
with the prosecutors and sort of to understand what's the next step, because it takes time, you know, to go
right.
through the process. So
right.
And if you're in the dark, you don't feel like you have a lot of control. So
yeah.
it's our advocate's job to really keep them informed, the process, if there's legal action.
Right, right. Because that seems to me to be one of the biggest reasons why somebody who's going through domestic violence wouldn't come forward, is like they've been gaslit to the point where they're convinced, if I get out there, no one's helping me.
Right.
I'm by myself, and then who knows what this person does to me, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So those folks do have to step up, the legal advocates and things like that.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
As far as your legal advocates go, I mean, how many clients are they seeing? How many people do they work with generally?
Well, most of all of our clients are needing some sort of legal work, whether it's a restraining order, or protection order. Some are just, you know, going through a divorce process, working with CPS. We have our legal advocate in Shelton, and she's she's pretty much always busy. And then we just hired the one out in Belfair. So, and a lot of our other advocates can help with paperwork, but she specializes.
You have like
in
your
that.
Legal ones specifically,
yeah, right.
and
she's bilingual.
Else.
And cool. And I also wanted to mention that we last year were accredited as a sexual assault center. So we saw about 70 individuals last year. And so we can go on call on site.
Wow.
We're first responders, law enforcement. We have always have someone on call around the clock that could go out and assist going to the hospital for exams and things like that. Right. So that's another component that
awesome.
They're not eligible if it's just a sexual assault for a shelter, but we certainly can help with, again, with the legal work and just the support. We have support groups, and you don't have to be in the shelter to partake of any of our classes or support groups. We have art classes and weekly support groups for both sexual assault survivors and domestic violence survivors. So.
Wow.
So for that accreditation that you now have, is that unique to like Washington State? I mean, are there many shelters who are like that as well?
There's more and more that are, right. Yeah. So there's a process to go through to make sure that we have all the things in place to do that. So we did that about a year and a half ago. So there's, you know, other sexual assault centers like in Kitsap and Grays Harbor. And I've been talking with them. That's one thing that I really enjoy doing in my job is getting to know other leaders in this service area learning from them. And I think a lot of us in this region have a really good working relationship and collaborate because we're, you know, serving the same population.
Right.
So it's really important to have those healthy relationships.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to begin giving to Turning Point. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
Okay. Well, unrestricted funds are always wonderful when they're not attached to a grant and that sort of thing, because needs arise, whether it's maintenance for our building. We currently have a fence that needs repair. We did find not too long ago, someone was trying to sneak into our because it's, you know, so it could be fixing a fence. It could be getting blankets and pillows. Like I said, there's people come and they have nothing. And so we just want to have food on hand. And so it could be as small as toiletries to, you know, maintenance for a shelter. It's a 60 bed shelter. It's imagined like a big house. Always needs upkeep. And then also the programmatic work where we need materials for the prevention program or for our classes. And as we're growing and looking at hiring a youth advocate, we'll definitely need things for children. And we have things for children, but in terms of specific classes and whatnot. So, those unrestricted funds are just wonderful. As any nonprofit knows, then it just makes you a little more nimble, a little bit more responsive to the immediate needs. So they're greatly appreciated.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Well, do you have any programs or upcoming events you want to highlight?
I certainly do.
Okay.
So April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And so we have an event on 4:30 on April 30th at 4:30. And we're doing a mix and mingle movie event up at the Hub in Belfair. We decided to hold our event in that area.
Yeah.
And we're going to be showing, we have concessions and we're going to, you know, raise money that way. But we're going to show a movie called The Tale with Laura Dern and have discussion time afterwards. So it's really going to, you know, just bring awareness to that issue. So that'll be them. Looking further out, we have our annual Power of the Purse event on October 18th at Little Creek.
Okay.
And people can go on our website and get more information about that as well.
Yeah, sounds very awesome. Nice. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, Gina, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about this very important topic. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate the time to share.
Okay, and that was our really incredible interview with Gina Blanchard-Reed. She, she really knows her stuff.
She does. It's great.
Turning Point sounds like a really, really cool organization with the, you know, sort of 60 beds. She talked about the, you know, like the families coming and just a great work that they're doing in the face of really, really tough situations. Yeah. So very, very neat. Thank you, Gina, for coming on again. Before we wrap up, you do have some information, some facts and figures regarding domestic violence, which I imagine are fairly sobering.
I didn't go too hard with this because I didn't really want to do that today.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have trivia for your next podcast, okay, so sure. Prepare for that.
All right.
So for some facts and figures, I was looking up, effects of domestic violence against women, and some things were just kind of like, oh, I didn't realize that. So, it can be something that has like lots of mental health or physical health effects, but right. also affect other ways. So like a person's work.
Yeah, right? Of course. Yeah,
if you are experiencing domestic violence and trying to flee from a perpetrator, you may not be able to work.
Yeah.
So half of women who experience sexual assault have had to quit or have been forced to leave jobs because of it.
Wow.
Especially in that first year. And the total lifetime income loss for women who flee situations like that can be estimated up to $250,000 for each woman.
Wow.
That's a lot. That's a lot of money you're losing.
It is true. It's totally unforeseen because if you really think about it, it's stunning that a person can be going through something so profound and tough, but then also have to reshift focus to do their job.
Yeah.
That seems like that would be one of the craziest things you would have to do.
Yeah. And then I found some information from a National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey.
Mm-hmm.
This was data from 2017, and it came from the CDC and Washington State Department of Health.
Okay.
So in Washington State, 41% of women and 32% of men report experiencing violence from an intimate partner.
Okay.
So we're almost at like the,
halfway 50, mark. Yeah.
Report experiencing violence.
Holy moly.
According to national data, men and women experience intimate partner violence at similar rates, but women experience negative impacts at higher rates. So like fear, concern for safety, PTSD, injury, and then missed work or school.
Yeah.
And then in 2016, 18% of 10th graders in Washington. So we're talking 15, 16-year-olds, okay? 18% of 10th graders reported they'd been made to engage in unwanted kissing or sexual contact. And then those kinds of things can build from there, right?
Wow.
And then both men and women, like I said, they experience either domestic violence or become victims of sexual assault.
Yeah.
And they get like a crazy range of health problems.
Okay.
And then chronic pain is a big one for
them. Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And then looking up some other stuff, I found like the RCW regarding domestic violence for our state.
Yeah.
RCW 1099020. And they list domestic violence is not limited to any of the following crimes, but they have 23
crimes
listed.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
So like assault in the first, second, third, fourth degree,
uh-huh.
drive-by shootings, coercion,
that's
unlawful
domestic
imprisonment.
Violence? Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in our state it's listed, and the RCW is that.
Yeah.
Stalking, interference with the reporting of domestic violence, for example. Mm-hmm, and then there was something about that I thought also interesting. In 1991, when they had this RCW like really getting going, the collective costs to the community. Let me just read this. The legislature finds that the collective costs to the community for domestic violence include the systemic destruction of individuals and their families, lost lives, lost productivity, and increased healthcare, criminal justice, and social service costs.
Yeah.
So they're looking at how the system had not been adequately funded or structured at that time.
Right, right.
So I don't know if there's really much work since then to really address that within the legislature. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned earlier, there's the Address Confidentiality Program, which is a government program, but it's also kind of not, it's run through the Secretary of State's office, and it's a records protection and mail forwarding service predominantly. And I'll put a link for it and then the contact info for that on the page so people can access that. But if anybody's interested in calling now, it's 1-800-822-1065.
Okay.
That's their toll-free number for ACP.
Yeah, yeah. And I will say this. I'm just not quite sure how to legislate this sort of stuff out. I think it starts with human-human contact. I think it starts with getting people the strength to get out of relationships that are tough. Giving the perpetrators maybe an opportunity to talk things out. I mean, you heard
counseling services.
You heard Gina kind of talk about, they they go 1 through 5 in terms of the scale of severity. Maybe potentially folks who have a domestic violence incident and they get charged with like a level 1 or mm-hmm. a level 2, do those folks have an opportunity to be taken care of, to have like mental health professionals talk to them, talk them through it? The folks who are the victims, you know, they need to feel like they can get out and be supported.
Absolutely.
I don't know how much you can legislate all that.
Yeah, I think that this is one of those issues that's harder to legislate. The thing that you could legislate would be, say, punishments for perpetrators.
Right.
You can definitely do that.
Right.
And then you could do something where it's a little more like, oh, we're going to set aside X amount of money every year in the budget to support shelters or places where survivors can get access to services.
Yeah, legislate assurances of protections, basically. But that's as far as you can go. I mean, you can't really legislate human behavior.
No, you cannot.
You know, so if somebody is...
I'm going to drink my 40-ounce soda, and you're gonna deal with it.
Right. Yeah. We see it all the time in sillier issues like banning of sugar or sodas and stuff like that. But for sure, this is a real, like, human problem.
Yes.
It is. There's a lot that folks are coping with. There are just violent people in the world.
Yeah.
And I kind of tend to agree with Gina's assertion a little bit in that I think that we're seeing more and more people able to kind of finally say, I can get out of this situation, right? And maybe that's why we're seeing it more, because they feel like they now have the space available to report it.
Yeah.
That could be something. Although, we've talked to Safe Place on this issue, and it sounds like domestic violence is getting more and more violent.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a really, like, murky, tough picture, super tough issue with lots and lots of layers to it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I don't see it going away anytime soon. So places like Turning Point are pretty important.
Yeah, they're going to be needed for a long time.
They're going to be needed for a while. To kind of close out, talk about some of the upcoming events. Well, we'll do a quick review. Well Fed, Well Read just wrapped up about a week and a half ago. Great turnout again. Thank you to all the volunteers who helped put that together, both in Olympia and Spokane. We will have some recognition for those folks as the books and food are counted. It's fast approaching May 9th, the Leadership Breakfast. At the Skookum Creek Event Center in the Little Creek Casino and Resort. We can actually give you the guest list now. We have a lovely woman coming from Uganda. She's actually a refugee, works with Medical Teams International. We have Alex Stone. Shout out to Alex, a friend of the show, if you will, from Summit Assistance Dogs, to talk about how his life with disabilities got easier as a result of the dog that he was given. And then we got Jordan Babineau, former Seahawks star, who will be talking about his upbringing and the advocacy work he does with the Lenny Wilkins Foundation. He'll be the keynote speaker.
Very nice.
So it'll be a great show. We'll have a whole bunch of stuff there that we're excited to kind of showcase to people. And, of course, we'll have our video.
Yeah.
Which, spoiler alert, Heather Lucas's part is getting rave reviews.
Just the one part or all the parts?
The one part in particular is getting rave reviews. There's not a person so far that hasn't walked away like laughing hysterically. So
it's funny though, because like whenever anybody sees it, they're like looking at me doing that, and then I'm over there serious, like working on a computer, just being a computer person.
Well, the tough part is. We have everybody come back at different times asking to see the video, right? So I'll show it like 15 times.
Yes, you will.
but got to give people what they want. So that's coming up on May 9th. And then, of course, May 8th, the day before, come to PSRW, try to beat me and pop a shot. Last time I'm going to say that.
Okay.
But try to do it. Anyway, that is today's podcast on domestic violence. Thank you so much to Gina Blanchard-Reed for coming on, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye.